Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. I'm having so much fun today. You know, we're going to get back to Dr. Fascist, and we're going to talk about the thief in chief, Biden, and, you know, all the other stuff that's going on. But I thought just today we take a little bit of a break. It's Monday. At least I think it's Monday. I have kind of a strange week. And let's have a little bit. Let's do what we used to do as Americans: dream. You know, have an American dream. And one of the dreams for my generation of youth, when I was a youth, was flying airplanes. I actually got to act on that, and I had my first flight in a small plane at 12 years old and loved it, loved every minute of it. Knew I wanted to be an airline pilot. Of course, I knew I wanted to be an airline pilot from the age of five. Now, unfortunately, that didn't work out through a series of, you know, sometimes comic, sometimes tragic, sometimes very difficult events, which I really don't want to go into, but it didn't happen. And so I hope that someday, you know, as Action Radio grows and prospers, you know, one of my personal ambitions is to get back flying again and flying something really fast and really aerobatic and really, you know, powered by jet. Okay. I'm not kidding. I want to get back. I might even teach jet flying if I get good at it again. I got the ratings for it. I just don't have the experience or the money to do it. Anyway, I think we've lost our romance in many ways, and it's really too bad. And this is something the Democrats do. They take away everything that makes life fun. You know, happiness to them is you're dependent on government, you're miserable, you're controlled, and your life basically is work and taxes. That's what makes Democrats happy. Okay, that's not what makes Americans happy. You know, we're an adventurous people. We are pioneers. We dream big. We do really cool stuff. And what we like to, one of the things that people used to like to do, that's unfortunately gone away, is fly airplanes, or at least dream about flying airplanes, or do something with airplanes that's, you know, that's kind of fun. I mean, it was every kid, mostly boys' dreams back in the days when, you know, guys were flying and women weren't. That's changed, of course, but still, the majority of people who learned to fly, at least in my experience back when I was teaching in the 80s and early 90s, were guys. Now, the women that came to flying were dynamite. I mean, they were amazing. And I had quite a few women students, which was unusual. But I think the only thing I can ascribe it to is the fact that I treated everybody equally. And there were no favorites with me. I mean, I basically was a terror to all my students. So men or women didn't really matter. But, you know, as far as I can tell from what they're telling me, you know, they were pretty happy and they turned out to be really good pilots. And so now that United has decided to buy these airliners, these supersonic airliners, I got kind of curious. So I've been sort of looking at this for the last little while, and I got about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got 7 articles. We don't have time for that today. But if you want to talk about this, you know, we're going to have Shannon on the line here any minute now, and when she calls in, we're going to talk local stuff. Because the other big news, of course, is that Jody Conrad, who's a local reporter here, did a story on Action Radio. And we met at the Arise USA Festival. This was either 2 or 3 Saturdays ago. I kind of lose track of time. And so we had a booth. Action Radio had a booth. And Josie was responsible for that. You know, it was huge help. Everything from the tent to moral support to, you know, schmoozing with the stars that were there later in the evening and getting pictures and the whole bit. So, you know, so we had a person in our Tweety Bird costume, which is kind of cool too. And so there are so many friends of Action Radio. There's so many people that join us, that come to this show, that do just amazing things to make all this work. You know, it's not just me. If it were just me, it wouldn't, you know, I'd sit here and do monologues for 2 hours. That would bore me to death. So I'm not going to do that. Anyway, I'm expecting Shannon to call. Maybe something's happened. You know, like I say, people, you guys get busy, stuff, you know, happens. And we'll, so anyway, we, hopefully she'll join us here in a minute. If not, then I'm going to keep on talking. Or if you want to talk about supersonic jets, I can give you the basic background as to what happened with those. It was United. And United has promised to get, I guess, by 20 of these boom jets. You know, it's kind of interesting they call it boom. I'm sure that comes from sonic boom, which was one of the problems. That was one of the big deals with airliners, was they had this thing called a sonic boom. And, of course, all jet fighters do too, but they're smaller, so they're boom. They don't have as much boom as a big jet has a boom. And the biggest boom around used to be from the Concorde. Now, the Concorde was an incredible airplane. I remember when it came out in the early 70s, which is remarkable you know, to have a supersonic airliner back at that particular time, because they didn't have computers. You know, I was watching a special on this, actually one of the many videos watching on this last night. You know, it had circuit breakers. You know, it had 1970s technology. You know, so it was designed from drawings and engineering blueprints and, you know, slide rules. And I don't even think they had calculators when they built this thing, right? And so they were able to design this incredible airplane with this beautiful Delta wing. And it carried about 100 passengers very fast. You know, and it's interesting that the three things the special focused on last night: speed, fuel, and noise. Those are the things that seem to cause the greatest problems for a supersonic flight. The speed, first of all, you got to get going that fast, and that requires a whole lot of power and an airplane that's shaped really well to be able to go that fast. The other consideration is fuel. And of course, you know, engines that go that fast burn a lot of fuel. It's just like your car. If you want to go, you know, 150 miles an hour, then you're going to need a big engine. You're going to have to stomp on it, and off you go. Right? Well, it's not very economical. And of course, the other problem is the noise. And we've talked about that before. The boom, the sonic boom, as it were. You know, in fact, Shannon's online, so I'm going to ask about the boom and whether she actually heard some sonic booms, you know, from her days in the Air Force. Anyway, so those are the big things: speed, fuel, and noise. And we'll consider that as we get going. We're going to talk more about this. Let me see. Dr. Pryor can't make it today, so we got Shannon now till about 7:30. And then we're going to I have some information from Dr. Pryor to share. And then most of the show, we're going to talk about what it's like to fly in a supersonic airliner, or if you want to actually get back to doing that. I'm going to talk to Shannon about that, too, because I'm kind of curious her opinion, whether she is interested as well in winging across the sky at 1,300 miles an hour. All right. Be right back. She served her country in the Air Force. She swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And now Shannon Rice serves on the City Council of Milton, Florida. One voice, unwavering, still supporting and defending the Constitution against a wave of emergency declarations, lockdowns, and unlawful force. And all in support of the rights of her constituents and all Americans. She is Shannon Rice, and this is the Rice Report. Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good. It's a Monday, you know.
Yeah, actually, for me, it's kind of like a Saturday. I mean, I know that's kind of weird, but I work really hard over the weekend, and the weekdays are my days off, so it's kind of crazy. But I wake up, and I think, what day is this? Oh, wait, it's Monday. Okay, I have to do a show, but that's all I have to do. I get to prep and do things like that. So what's going on, Milton? What's going on with you? I haven't talked to you for a couple of weeks, so welcome back. And
Thank you. Tell us.
So, yeah, share the news.
A lot going on in Milton. So the spring schedule for Bands on the Blackwater has one more show, and then they're going to have a little break before we get into the fall schedule, and that starts up in September. But in between, you know, there's festivals going on. There's the Summertime Hero Fest coming up this weekend. And then on July 4th, we'll have that weekend there's a Riverwalk Festival, and then there's 4th of July fireworks. And let's see.
I have to interrupt you for a second. The thief in chief, the insurrection president, the liar, the fraud has said that we can't have a 4th of July unless we comply with Dr. Fascist. Dr. Fascist has said you can't have a 4th of July unless you mask, vaccinate, and knuckle under to the powers that be. So how is it that Milton, you arrogant little town, how is it that you think that you can go against the primal forces and have an Independence Day on Independence Day? What are you thinking?
Well... So we know that we don't have a dictator. So sorry, please excuse the dog in the background. He's what made me late this morning calling you.
I didn't hear the dog in the background. I enjoy background noise sometimes. It depends on what it is. But we've had birds, dogs. You know, we've had all kinds of noise in the background. And sometimes people don't realize it, and then they hear the podcast later and go, "Oh no, Fido, what were you thinking?" But it's fine.
Yeah, he's coughing because he's been outside digging, and he, I guess, breathed in dirt and stuff. He'll be fine. But anyway,
okay,
that's what made me late.
I feel better now.
And,
well,
As far as 4th of July, yeah, we're still doing our thing. We don't have a dictator. I wish the rest of the world would realize that, or the rest of the United States would realize that and just do what they want to do. It's going to be a big, beautiful show right down on the Blackwater River.
Let's give you a round of applause. Yay, Milton. Yay, independence. Screw you, Biden. I'm not regular.
And then,
Go ahead.
So other neat things that are going on with the city is we're still talking with the developer about the development that they're going to do down at the marina. Hopefully we can come to an agreement with what they want and what we want.
Okay.
And then interesting, a private investor has come forward and made a verbal proposal, you know, nothing in writing, but to build the wastewater treatment plant. So that's interesting. And the city manager has talked with him about that. I don't have any information yet, you know, as far as what the results of that were, if that's doable.
Okay.
But that was interesting.
Well, we're going to talk about all these individually once you've summarized all these things. But I got some questions.
Our businesses are still suffering due to lack of workers, our restaurants. So we're still.
All right, all you lazy bums out there, get off your butts and go back to work. What the hell's wrong with you?
The state of Florida is now or very soon requiring proof for looking for jobs for to receive unemployment, which they stopped that during the pandemic.
Yeah.
I don't even like to say that there was a pandemic. It's so weird.
There wasn't a pandemic. There was a marketing scheme. There was a vaccine marketing scheme. I mean, that's how we talk about it. You know, let's talk about that for a second, because it's really fascinating how the rest of the world is catching up to where we were over a year and 4 months ago. You know, sorry, folks, but, you know, it's nice to have you back on board. But we talked about Wuhan Lab being the source of the virus back when Bill Gertz was on the show. And we were fortunate enough to have half an hour with one of the best reporters in the world in terms of foreign policy, intelligence, and all that kind of stuff, Bill Gertz, Washington Times. Even though he had a cold, and even though he probably has heard of our show from anybody at this point, was able to tell us that, yeah, we think it's the Wuhan Lab. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't know what's going on. But, you know, one of the things I found out lately is that somebody was mentioning this on the news, that the bats that supposedly passed on, the coronavirus from the seafood market there in Wuhan. The seafood market of Wuhan doesn't sell bats, by the way. There are no bats in the Wuhan seafood market. It's a seafood market. Bats are not seafood. Therefore, and this is kind of funny for folks, but nobody made that connection. There are no bats there. So the idea of getting, a coronavirus from a bat that doesn't exist there, there's like the nearest bat that they're talking about is 1,000 miles away. They have bats in the lab, because that's what they're experimenting on, some combination of bioweapons and everything else. But it's fascinating to me, the misinformation and what people will knuckle under to. I mean, the pandemic, we've talked about this before too, and this is going to come out. Rudy Giuliani's on this and a bunch of other folks. We knew back in March 2nd, I broke the story, the chloroquine kills COVID. We knew then, before the very first 15 days to slow the spread, that there was no pandemic. That all you had to do was give 15 days of hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin and plus vitamin D, vitamin C, and we've been over this before. There was no need for what happened. And that is the crime of the century. And that is something we're going to talk about. So you, Shannon Rice, City Council of Milton, is there some action the City Council of Milton is going to take regarding the state? I'm going to put you on the spot here for a minute. You can say, well, I have to study that, Greg. I'll get back to you. I mean, that's okay. All right. But is there some action?
That isn't anything that I have heard us talking about. I mean, that, we've talked about on the council.
I didn't ask the question yet. Wait a minute. Wait for the question. are the cities going to go after the states? Are the states going to go after the feds? Are the feds going to go after Dr. Fascist? I mean, I don't know where this is going to go, but the crime of the century is the suppression of the cures, the ridiculous amount of people that died, which is, either borderline or into the Holocaust range. I mean, it's ridiculous what happened, and there's no reason for it. It was a completely preventable, Judy Mikovits has been on the show, Dr. Mikovits calls it the plandemic. To me, the COVID-19 was a created virus simply to market their vaccines, because they prevented the cures. They prevented the very things that would have precluded the need for the vaccines. That, to me, this is why I call Dr. Fascist a genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher, because that's what he is. All right, your turn.
Okay. Are you watching all the social media stuff about him as far as what people have to say about him from his emails?
Well, not really so much, because we already reported on this. You know, and here's the weird thing, too. I have this kind of thing that I like to be ahead of the crowd. And so everybody else has picked up on Dr. Fascist. So it's not that they all listen to Action Radio, even though they should. But had they done this, they would have known this, you know, a year ago. And other sources, too, Daily Caller, Daily Wire, Gateway Pundit, various other places, you know, Breitbart, you know, have been reporting on this guy and the problems. I have a report from 2000 that said that someone looked back into 2005 when Dr. Fascist knew all about hydroxychloroquine, knew that it killed COVID viruses, you know, SARS viruses and things like that, totally suppressed it, didn't tell anybody, and demonized anybody who tried to practice it. In fact, I'm sure he helped, you know, get rid of doctors who tried to prescribe it, like Dr. Zelenko, you know, demonized this guy. Yet he had the cure. So here's somebody who actively works against the cure, and yet he's still, I mean, this guy should be in jail for the rest of his miserable, stupid life. Anyway, I'm mad about this. It didn't have to happen. You know?
Well, so have you been watching the ads? DeSantis is putting out ads regarding Nikki Fried and Charlie Crist not being like a good selection for governor.
Well, of course not.
Have you seen
well,
that?
I don't know about Nikki Fried. but I remember she had a scandal, too, because she used to have her picture on all the gas pumps. Remember that? You know, and that was judged to be, yeah, that was judged to be campaigning. You know, so you go pump your gas, and all you see is Nikki Fried's face there. Hi, I'm the agriculture commissioner. I'm here safeguarding your pump to make sure it is accurately registering the weight of your fuel. Thanks, Nikki. Nice campaign sticker. Yeah, but she supports the lockdowns. She supports the unconstitution. Maybe I should start calling that. There are those who support the Constitution and those who support the unconstitution. Well, she's on that side. So, you know, and I believe the pronunciation is Chris. I think you kind of elevated him there a little bit beyond his status.
Oh, Chris. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Don't be sorry. No, I just think it's funny. Yeah, I'm sure you're not the first. So what do you think? You know, so what's DeSantis going to do about this? You know, I mean, he's been leading now. He was one of the worst people to lock down. Remember when we screamed at him? Remember when this first started back in March and April? I called him Dictator DeSantis. I said, you idiot, you moron. You even wrote an open letter to him, you know, intellectual conservative. Send it to his office. He said, hey, stop the lockdowns. Don't be ridiculous. Constitution
well, you know, he's come back and said that he regrets, sorry, even one day of the lockdown.
Mm-hmm. So why do you do it?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
You don't have to answer that. We can speculate. You know? Okay. Well, let's in the time remaining,
I guess that people didn't know what they were getting into. That doesn't excuse it. There's no mm-hmm. there's no excuse for it. But that's the only thing I can think of is that didn't know what was happening.
Well, if he didn't have the knowledge that we had, it means he didn't look, because I found it very quickly. I mean, I just put in into my search engine, you know, what kills viruses, and all this stuff came up. Other viruses, different drugs. Hydroxychloroquine came up immediately, you know, and the Raoult study, Dr. Raoult in Marseille, France. This is the end of February last year, okay? It took me maybe, it was like one question opened up all this stuff. I had it within a couple of hours. I had that March 2nd show, and then we proceeded to go from there. So it didn't take a lot of independent research. So what it really comes down to is asking the right question. Now, I'm wondering, you're in government, so tell me about the psychology of this. My thought is that DeSantis had limited information, and he didn't have the curiosity to look beyond it. He had his reports. He had his advisors. He had people telling him. He had Dr. Fascist in Washington saying, you better lock down or all your people are going to die. You know, and of course, he thinks, well, I don't want to be responsible for that, you know, even though he wouldn't have been. But they have to get away from, you know, what they're told and actually have the independence, as we did here at Action Radio, to actually ask the question. And the right question was, what else kills viruses, you know, besides a vaccine, you know, which only is good for prevention, maybe, and not even that, you know, and it wasn't that tough to do. Shannon?
Well, I mean, I can tell you just on my little tiny level, you know, I mean, city council compared to governor, I can't compare, but
sure you
can. I get a lot of...
You were right, he was wrong.
I get a lot of advice from people, and we lean heavily on our city manager. So I'm sure he has people giving him information about things. You can't be an expert in all things, When you ran for office, you didn't run saying you were an expert in everything and you knew everything there is to know. So you do have to listen to a lot of people, and you have to have, you know, discernment to recognize things as right or wrong. But, you know, there's a lot of different things going on. Yeah, the COVID situation didn't, you know, some people that was their whole life. But for a governor, he's got a lot of other things going on too that he's getting advice about. So I'm not saying I'm giving him a pass because I'm still aggravated about it.
Really?
A lot of people were hurt by it. But that's my only thought of why you might quickly make a decision if people are pressing you to make a decision. I don't imagine he got very much sleep the first couple weeks.
Yeah. I think though what it comes down to is when someone, you know, when the buck stops where it stops with the governor or with the president, you know, and you have people telling folks that if you don't do this, you know, millions of people could die. And that's what Trump was told. It was a complete lie.
Yeah.
You know, a complete lie about Dr. Fascist and the health bureaucrats and Big Pharma because they want to sell vaccines. They knew damn well how strong the virus was and how strong it wasn't. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I would hope that anybody that gave him poor advice has already been fired.
We're talking Governor DeSantis? Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't hear of any firings, you know, on the news, so maybe it's kind of quietly in the background. Because not only do you have to rely on people, you have to rely on the people that they rely on. I mean, you don't know how far this goes. You know, what is the source? Everybody says, well, let's go to the CDC. Well, the CDC is one of the most corrupt organizations in the country. It's not a regulatory agency. They can't make rules. They can't make policies. All they can do is issue guidelines. The only thing they can do, the only power I know they have, is to quarantine people coming into the country, you know, with a communicable disease once it's proven they have it. In other words, they have symptoms, which is the one thing they didn't want to do with people from Wuhan, China. So the one thing they were supposed to do, they didn't even do, and they did all this other crap they're not supposed to do. And people are following their guidelines like it's a rule, like it's a law. It's not. And they certainly can't supersede the Constitution. Constitution still rules. So even if you have the worst pandemic in the world, you still have free speech, free religion. You know, you still have your rights. Okay. Now you can choose not to exercise them. You can sequester. You can sit in your home. You can do whatever you want. That's fine. And if you're proven to have a disease, if you've got the symptoms, then yeah, then the public health officials can say, you know what, you've got this disease. But they can't, you know, they can't use these horrible tests they use were ridiculously high in false positives. The test wasn't even designed, you know, to test for viruses. So that's false. So they're using guidelines that aren't laws. They're using tests that don't register the disease. They're giving false information. Everything about this was false. Again, it was a psychopathic drug-pushing marketing campaign. That's it. That's why I'm mad.
Yeah, and that checking everybody's temperature when they go into places was silliness.
Well, yeah, because think about somebody that just, you know, ran in. They have a meeting at the last minute, right? They're running in. They're hot anyway. Well, of course your temperature is going to be elevated slightly.
Well, yeah. Or you just came in from the cold outside. I mean, a lot of this temperature checking was going on when it was cool.
Oh, that's interesting.
So you had in.
other things
that are going on in the city.
We've done enough of this. Yeah, go ahead.
Talks about the school on Stewart Street, the trade school and adult school still going on, and it's looking very positive. And did you know, well, you probably didn't know, because I didn't know, that there are actually people turned away from our adult school here.
What? Why?
Because they don't have a space for them. They don't have the capacity for them. So you have people that are trying to go back to school to get their adult diploma and are told that the school is full. And that is very bad.
So, well, you know, we need now, there's an opportunity for a private educator to come in and talk to the city and say, hey, I want to set up an adult school. You know, I went back to school as an adult.
This new school on Stewart Street will give capacity.
Okay. Oh, good. Is it private or public?
It's going to be public because school district's involved. But
now I hear the dog.
I just gave him a sock to let him tear up. So you'd leave me alone for a minute.
Bored with that. Yeah. Let's interrupt the radio show. This is much more fun. So if the dog wants attention, all he has to do is jump on you while you're trying to do the radio show. They're not stupid. It's like the cat that sits on your newspaper or a magazine you're reading, you know, and then looks at you and says, pet me.
Yeah.
They know.
Yeah.
They know what to, they're not stupid. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all right. Well, I want to talk real quick. Actually, let me blow my own horn for a second here. If you haven't seen the Santa Rosa Press Gazette, there is an article on Action Radio right on the front page. I mean, there I am in my orange and blue shirt, you know, with my microphone and sitting behind the headsets on the whole bit, just like I do the show. I mean, that picture was taken from a video of me doing a promotional video for the show. And so it's really cool. So I could tell you a funny story. So last night after my day job, you know, it's late at night and I'm going to this the gas station and I said, do you have any Santa Rosa Gazettes? He said, oh, yeah, right over there. And okay, fine, great. So I pull out one. I go, wow, gee, I'm on the front page. So I look at the guy behind the counter. I said, so what do you think? Does it look like me? He's like, damn, that's you, man. Okay, wow, yeah, pretty cool. So I kind of freaked the guy out. But, it was nice to see. So if you haven't got your copy of the Santa Rosa Press Gazette, get it now if you want to put it on your wall, like I am going to. But otherwise, it's available online. So, Action Radio. We made it big time. We got some notice here.
Well, yeah, it's nice. The media was talking nice about you. I don't get the same.
What, are you jealous? Listen to that. Yeah, I finally make it to the press. And what's the first thing Shannon says? Well, they were nice to you. Okay, fine. You're a government official.
Yeah,
this must be mean to you. Yeah. Well, actually, the funny part is I've been here 4 years. You know, and so all of the time we had revolutionary shows at WEBY, and I've been here over 2 years, you know, doing the show from Blog Talk Radio, and yet this is the first time that I got some local coverage. Now, I got to see if the Pensacola News Journal, who knows me, the Pensacola News Journal picked up the story, darling. Do you know if they've decided to actually put in my sheer convoys? Do you think they need to include a little Action Radio in there? They're very important articles.
they're the ones that have always try to throw shade on me.
And then the next county, what do they care?
Spin everything. I don't know. I know.
I don't either. Crazy. Okay. Well, I'm really good for the events. Now, the Summertime Hero Festival, that's this weekend coming up?
Yes. And okay. It is a festival being put on to honor military and police, fire, EMS, all that. And they're going to have a pie eating contest. And
what kind of pie? I'm curious now.
Yeah, and they're having
we're very serious.
A food truck.
Eating contest? Oh, okay.
No, it's a cook-off or something. Mm. I mean, I don't know what they're cooking. I think that they're probably cooking whatever their specialty is, and then they'll be judging the food. And it's supposed to be fun, bounce houses, you know, the usual with that, and I think other games and vendors. And so that's
are they closing down our Main Street? Are they closing down Willing Street and having it on both sides of it again, or where is it going to be held?
I think it's all down at Jernigan's Landing.
Okay, so that's down by the waterfront there. All right, with the bands on the Blackwater.
Yeah.
So just to let you folks know who don't know what we're talking about here in Milton, you got to come to Milton. Okay, this is a happening place. We got a historic district. We're going to have really cool, funky shops here. We got a courthouse that's going to be turned into, I hope, you know, something like, you know, Pike Place Market in Seattle, only a little bit smaller because, you know, we're a little bit smaller than they are. But we got a river. We got roads in here. Come on down and visit. You know, I can make a promo for Milton. You want me to do a promo? Yeah, come on down, Milton, the center of the universe. Yes, you two can have a great time in Milton. I'll get some happy music in the background. This would be great. Just ask me.
Well, yeah, that's with the things that are great about Milton, and we've got people coming, and mm-hmm. we don't have a lot of workers for some of these restaurants.
Gotta come down. Have you heard my promo? My Milton promo? You got to go in a minute, but I'll play it when you're gone.
And then,
well, you guys can use that. I mean, I made it for Milton. You know, you can use my promo, so feel free.
Well, I will tell the city manager.
Okay. I mean, that's what it's for. I do this stuff. In fact, I've got another patriotic moment, except I kind of goofed. It's like 7 minutes long. But, you know, and they recorded it this morning. I'm like, oh no, this is a little bit more than I expected. But yeah, stuff happens when we get carried away here.
If you'll share it to your page, I'll share it to my page.
Oh, I wonder how to do that. The recording, I have to make a YouTube video with just like the Action Radio logo in the background. I could do that. Yeah. It's also, I wonder if you can share it. I guess you can't share MP3s directly. We'll have to work on that. Well, I'll get my engineer to talk to your engineer. They'll do lunch and we'll figure it out. Yeah. But you know, the really good news,
just
before you go.
We'll do breakfast again at Mason's,
yes. I've been trying to get back there. You know, it's been a year since we've been there. So just to let folks know, Shannon and I are friends, obviously. And we did, as the memorial service was canceled last year at Veterans Memorial Park, we did, of course, the only thing that good citizens, you know, would do. We defied it completely, made about a 45-minute video touring every aspect of Veterans Memorial Park, and then went to Mason's for breakfast. Now, Mason's is this really cool diner. Okay. And I got to go back. So we got to go back and chat. And, you know, I do it every year. We're going to do it more than that. But I'm a huge promoter of local business. In fact, just to let everybody know, Scoop's Ice Cream is moving. All right. You know, we're in Bangladesh. They're going to be hearing about this. This is really cool. Oh, by the way, China, I don't know if I told you this, China's dropped off the map. So the Communist Chinese Party has decided that enough of Action Radio, we're not going to let people listen anymore. So we just lost 1 billion listeners, potentially. What am I going to do? Anyway, but the good news, Scoop's Ice Cream has moved. You know, they're going to have a better location. Hopefully we'll get some Dixieland bands outside there. And my band is growing in skill and talent. So hopefully we'll be playing, you know, out at Beerless Brew House and some other place too. There's so much potential, just before you go, there's so much potential in this town of like, you know, like an Italian restaurant on the Riverwalk, you know, and more boats coming here and, you know, boat and car, you know, and just people exchanges and just, you know, the festivals we have. This is really an incredible place to be, an incredible time to be here, I think.
I agree. We have so much going on right now, especially.
Yeah.
Everyone come to Milton.
Exactly. Come to Milton. Well, you know, my job is to bring Milton to the world and the world to Milton. And we're going to work on that. All right.
I've been working on a new hashtag on some of my posts, spend your money in Milton.
Yeah. Yeah, drive to, not through. You know, my bumper sticker.
Yes.
We're going to make bumper stickers. We could do that too. Anyway. All right. Well, let me play a Milton theme now that we're all soaking in Milton and get you on your way. And then we'll get you back next week and we'll talk about all this fun stuff. And let's see, unless you have another news report, I think we're pretty much covered. We cover what we should be covering?
I think that's all I got. So y'all have a good week. I'm going to sign off here.
Yep, and read your Santa Rosa Press Gazette. Learn about Action
I've already
Radio.
Read that article.
I know. Thank you. And thanks for posting it, too. I do appreciate it. So, yeah, where can people reach you? We haven't talked about that for a while. If your constituents want to get in touch.
S. Rice. At MiltonFL.org.
Sounds good to me. If you missed it, that's why we podcast. All right, darling. I will talk to you next week. I will let you go to our Milton promotion.
Thank you.
This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live, too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912 and still booking national acts. We have Scoop's Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you're tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle, near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen. Yeah, it's sheer blind luck that I ended up here. You know, I applied to over 400 radio stations around the country over a few years, and most of them had the same old national talk shows, and I wanted to be a talk show host, and I figured that's where I had to start, even though I really wanted to introduce action radio, you know, as a concept. And Milton is near Pensacola. We're up in the northwest corner of Florida. I came here from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I just love the place here. It is so far distant from California socialism. You know, it's like friendly folks like Shannon, you know, who are on the city council, who we can talk to. You know, it's not some distant, you know, thing where they look at your skin color and decide whether they want to talk to you or not. You know, California is so totally changed. Now, there's some good parts of it left, the smaller parts, the northern towns, especially Northern California, you know, but to be able to come here from that kind of an environment is pretty amazing. So as you probably gathered, Dr. Peter Pry is not with us today. He's fine. He's just busy. You know, that doesn't sound quite right. Anyway, but yeah, what I'm going to do, I've got some information from him. I'm going to get to that. And then we're going to talk supersonic airplanes. And I'm pretty sure Pianchi's going to join us. I've already talked to him off the air about, you know, dropping it. He's a pilot. I'm a pilot. I've notified a couple of other pilots. Unfortunately, kind of late. I wish I'd thought of this earlier to let him know, but I only decided on the show last night because there is so much going on with Dr. Fascist and the other stuff. I just don't want to talk about it today. I got other things that, you know, we got other stuff to do. So I'm going to play Dr. Pry's theme, and that'll get us in the mood to talk about North Korea and electromagnetic pulse weapons. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Yeah, except it's me. Dr. Pry can't make it today. But, you know, I love that question. How much national security is enough? You know, it's like when Trump was in charge of, you know, the executive branch of the government, you know, and you got Dr. Fascist telling him that everybody's going to die. 2 million people are going to die unless you lock down, knowing full well that it was a planned, you know, the pandemic was a plandemic. That I absolutely believe he's behind, you know, the lockdowns and the mask mandates and changing the CDC guidelines 3 months after Trump takes office so that they can do what they want with it. You know, they can lock down as quickly as possible. They don't have to go by the old guidelines. And this is all part of it. Moderna, I think, is the real heart of this. It goes back to 2010 when Moderna was founded, you know, a bunch of really rich folks that wanted to be even richer. You know, and they started creating these vaccines and having a computer design them. So the computer, you know, prints out the genetic code, and then the code is somehow manufactured as living stuff, living messenger RNA. And they're basically assembling, you know, from a genetic code they run on a computer. It's fascinating. So instead of cutting and splicing actual genes to make the new genes they want, which is the old way of doing it, the computer does it. And the computer prints out the code, and then the code somehow, you know, and I'm not sure how the interface works, but the code gets to whatever is the messenger RNA by creating new messenger RNA, you know, from the code, from the computer code. It's really quite fascinating. I mean, it's worthwhile doing the research. I don't know if it's worthwhile putting it into a vaccine, considering the amount of deaths, injuries, and everything else it's caused. All right. So the question is always, you know, how much is enough? And if you're the one responsible, you know, do you go to war or not go to war? You know, at what point do you attack to save people, you know, or at what point do you not attack to save people? You know, do you give up land for peace, you know, and then hope that you actually get peace? Or, you know, I mean, always the question is nobody knows the outcome. And so presidents and governors, you know, I think are reluctant to sort of be, you know, adventurous. They're much more likely to be cautious, and they're always being told by their advisors, well, sir, if you, or ma'am, if you don't do this, then you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't really know how many people are going to be killed unless you you know, ship arms through Benghazi, you know, to ISIS so they can attack, you know, Assad in Syria on our behalf. And that was the Benghazi scenario, just in case you missed it. Okay. And so That's for Hillary Clinton. So it's such a master of propaganda. She'll sit there and just lie. And especially Susan Rice, another great liar, who came out afterwards and said, "Well, the video, it was a video by an anti-Muslim person that caused Benghazi to be raided." Nonsense. I got to post this to you. Remember the old joke about the three big lies? Okay. So the three big lies of government are Benghazi was caused by a video. There were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And, COVID, only a vaccine can stop COVID. All right. So these are the big problems we have. All right. So Dr. Pride, who's here, executive director, EMP, that's electromagnetic pulse. Those are nuclear weapons, all right, that totally disrupt electrical everything, destroy electric grids. EMP Task Force on National and Homeland Security, June 6, 2021. So he wrote this. This came out yesterday. So we're some of the first to actually deal with this report. And the report's titled North Korea EMP Threat, North Korea's Capabilities for Electromagnetic Pulse, EMP attack. Now, I promised Dr. Pryor read this. He had a request that I go through just like the first big page of it. So let's do that. And just imagine it's Dr. Pryor talking and not me. Greg, if I get my deep voice and sound like Dr. Pryor, then maybe this will, kind of make up for it. Anyway, he's always fascinating to talk to. Key judgments. This is the first section. This is what it's titled, Key Judgments. The West consistently and unwittingly cooperates with North Korea by underestimating the advancement, sophistication, and strategic implications of North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile programs. Thus, under the nose of the U.S. intelligence community, North Korea surprised the world by demonstrating ICBMs, that's intercontinental ballistic missiles, that could target any city in the United States, and a hydrogen bomb. And this is in the summer of 2017. So Trump's just taken office, right? Back to Dr. Pryor's report. North Korea's KMS-3 and KMS-4 satellites orbit over the U.S. daily. Most people don't know that. Their trajectory is similar to that planned for a Soviet-era secret weapon called the Fractional Orbital Bombardment System, or FOBS, deployed by the USSR at the time to make a surprise high-altitude EMP. He calls it a HEMP attack. I'm not sure. I guess it's a hydrogen electromagnetic pulse attack on the United States. Trajectories of North Korea's KMS-3 and KMS-4 satellites are near optimal for an HEMP attack on the U.S. if they are nuclear armed. He says HEMP attack does not require much accuracy or a reentry vehicle capable of penetrating the atmosphere and is well within North Korea's technological capabilities. Okay, because most weapons, when they talk about reentry, so a typical ballistic missile, right, from what I know about these things. So missile takes off. It's launched, all right? That missile will have what they call reentry vehicles. Those are nuclear bombs, all right? And they're like little missiles, within the missile. I think the MX missile had 10 what they call reentry vehicles. It was MIRVed. In other words, multiple independent reentry vehicles, MIRV. And so one missile could have 10 warheads. So if you have 100 missiles, you're talking 1,000 warheads. All right, all independently targeted, going to different locations, guided by their internal guidance system. All right, so this is why this is so dangerous. All right, so it says the article says multiple credible foreign sources, including from South Korea, China, and Russia, including two of Russia's foremost EMP weapons experts, they say, alleged the design for Russia's super EMP nuclear weapon leaked or was transferred to North Korea, and that North Korea has developed super EMP weapons. So it's not that EMP is bad enough. Super EMP is, thousands of times worse, because those, if they're powering hydrogen bombs, we're talking something huge, right? Super EMP weapons are typically small, lightweight, back to the report, and low yield, designed to emit enhanced gamma rays, not make a big explosion, and could fit within North Korea's KMS-3 and KMS-4 satellites, or be delivered against the U.S. by North Korean ICBMs, or be delivered against Japan, Guam, or the Philippines by North Korean RBMs. I guess that's IRBMs, intermediate-range ballistic missiles, or MRBMs. I guess that would be mid-range. I don't know what it is. Like the Nodong, or against South Korea by a wide array of North Korean SRBMs. That would be short-range ballistic missiles. We'll get through this. Yeah, super EMP weapons generate an extraordinarily powerful EMP field. That's where everything within it is destroyed electrically. All right, potentially 100 kilovolts per meter. So kilovolts, that's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of electricity per meter. Okay, that's like a square meter. It's not very big, all right? Greatly exceeding the U.S. military HEMP hardening standard, 50 kilowatts per kilovolts per meter. So in other words, these bombs are twice as strong as our strongest standard to stop them. That's what this means. U.S. civilian critical infrastructures like the National Electric Power Grid that are indispensable to U.S. military power projection capabilities are unprotected against HEMP. Should I read that again? Are unprotected against HEMP. According to North Korea state media, their September 2017 H-bomb is also a super EMP weapon. The H-bomb, the explosive power of which is adjustable from tens of kilotons to hundreds of kilotons, is a multifunctional thermonuclear nuke with great destructive power, which can be detonated at high altitudes for super powerful EMP, and that's according to strategic goals. Immediately following their September 2017 H-bomb test, North Korea published a technical report, The EMP Might of Nuclear Weapons, accurately describing a super EMP nuclear weapon. A little bit more, almost done. North Korea has non-nuclear EMP weapons, including an EMP cannon used to impose an electromagnetic blockade on air traffic to Seoul, South Korea's capital, making repeated attacks that also disrupted communications and the operation of automobiles in several South Korean cities in December 2010, March 9th, 2011, and April to May 2012. So they've already done this. All right, EMP. So in other words, you don't see it, you don't feel it, but this blast goes off and it basically fries all of your electrical systems, all your computers, you know, the computer chip in your car, and everything stops. You know, the water stops, the electricity stops, you know, the oil pipelines stop, everything stops. All right, and then they use this to impose electromagnetic blockade on air traffic to Seoul. So in other words, air traffic control stops. So the airplanes are on their own. In fact, the airplane systems may stop also. I don't know. I know they're hardened against lightning, but I don't know what they do against EMP. Anyway, that's the Dr. Peter Prize report. That's what he said, and that doesn't scare the hell out of you. Then, and here Biden's worrying about climate change. What an idiot! All right, let me play you the piece that I just made recently on Santa Rosa Volunteers. So Santa Rosa, this is a little longer than I expected, you know, then we'll talk supersonic airliners. So Santa Rosa Volunteers is a group I met recently, and they do all kinds of wonderful volunteer stuff. They're patriots. They're trying to, bring about a knowledge of our founding documents. So they basically chartered me to create that knowledge, all right? And so these are supposed to be about 1 minute. But I got a little carried away. This one's 7. So sit back, have a cup of coffee, listen to what you think. I'll try and keep them closer to 3 to 4 minutes. But as you hear, this one got a little bit more involved because of all the other things I bring to it. So I'll be back in a little bit. Enjoy your founding moments. And here we go. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. A caller last week brought up Federalist number 46. This is from the Federalist Papers, which are a series of essays written by our founders explaining and arguing for the ratification of the Constitution. Federalist number 46 was written by James Madison, published Tuesday, January 29th, 1788, and addressed to the people of the state of New York. The caller said this is the Federalist paper that gives power to the idea that the states and the people could take up arms to control the federal government if they exceeded their legitimate delegated powers in controlling the states and the people. Not specifically to this caller, but there are those who view our situation in the extreme of either ballots or bullets. In other words, if the electoral process doesn't produce good government, then maybe, as Jefferson once said, the tree of liberty has to be refreshed with the blood of patriots and tyrants. The question, though, is when such force should be undertaken. The founders saw force as a last resort and limited to the force necessary to preserve liberty. In the case of England, after all other measures were exhausted, the only possible resolution was total war, a war that was forced upon us. That was the exception, until the total war between the states. We will consider that in a separate episode. The title of Federalist 46 is The Influence of the State and Federal Governments Compared. Madison determined that the states would have more natural affinity to the people because of the closer connections in a state versus the distant federal government, unless the federal government proves the better and more popular government to the states. I don't think Madison would have said that if he had any idea how far the federal government has illegally exceeded the powers delegated to it by the states in the Constitution. Nor would he have predicted the move and acceptance towards a national government, which is top-down, as opposed to federal, which has co-equal yet competing parts. Regarding the use of arms, as the caller mentioned, Madison said, "The only refuge left for those who prophesy the downfall of the state governments is the visionary supposition that the federal government may previously accumulate a military force for the projects of ambition." In other words, the states can stand against the feds unless you believe the feds will raise an army to rule the states. To counter any such imagined fear, Madison said, "Let a regular army, fully equal to the resources of the country, be formed, and let it be entirely at the devotion of the federal government. Still, it would not be going too far to say that the state governments, with the people on their side, would be able to repel the danger." This supposes that there is no gun control, the states have command of the National Guard, and that the federal government is still subordinate to the states and actually complies with the limitations of the Constitution. Unfortunately, none of that is true today. Madison also says, "Besides the advantage of being armed, which the Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, the existence of subordinate governments to which the people are attached and by which the militia officers are appointed forms a barrier against the enterprises of ambition more insurmountable than any which a simple government of any form can admit of." Again, the federal government and the national military is huge, especially when state national guards are federalized, and that combination is way more powerful than any state militia or militia of the people, which is not to say they will be used against the states or the people, but they could. And then the question of who and how many would participate is opened up. Clearly, Madison believed that the power of the states, combined with the people, were, as this country was designed, way more powerful than the federal government, and that in itself would be more than enough to preclude any action by the feds to reduce the power of either the states or the people. The mistake Madison could not foresee was the explosive growth of the federal government resulting from such unconstitutional policies as a federal income tax and a host of unconstitutional powers that the federal judiciary has refused to declare unconstitutional. This is why at Action Radio we push a policy of defense equality, where no unit of any government or law enforcement entity is better armed than the people in their jurisdiction. And that covers a town and their local police, or a nation and all the armed agents and departments of the federal government, including especially the FBI. The answer to the caller's question is not to take Federalist number 46 and use that as the motivation to build up arms to control the federal government, or use the arms in that fashion. The real answer is to disarm the federal government of all weapons, agents, agencies, and departments not specifically authorized by the Constitution. That would be the entire federal government except for the military, which we want to be armed as well as possible to defend this nation. Our greatest danger is not from our military, just the opposite. They are our greatest protectors. The greatest danger is the arrogance, accumulation, and use of power, wealth, and arms by the federal government against the people without regard to the states, and with the so far compliance of the states to be subordinate to the feds. Madison was right in the system of government and power balance he described in Federalist 46. So long as the conditions remained the same and the feds complied with the Constitution, they didn't. So the question for us is, are we, or will we, be at a point where the use of arms is necessary by the people for the security of free states and against the feds? Or is there another way or many other ways. At Action Radio, we believe that we the people can change the conditions back to the system Madison described. But it's going to take a huge effort to take the unconstitutional powers, arms, and wealth from the feds to restore the system we should have had all along. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. That's federalistpapers.org. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website, again, is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Dangerously cool. All right, we're back. Let's get going here. Let's start. So we're going to get about an hour and 5 minutes, an hour and 4 minutes left. Like I said, this time probably arguing various different things, and we're going back and forth. But it's been here. It's been great. So if anybody wants to call in and talk about this, let me kind of set the scene for you. And a supersonic flight, as I understand it and know it. Again, the big problems, and this is from a video I was watching last night, speed, fuel, and noise are big problems, all right? So we have a situation now where flying is a pain in the ass. I mean, really, yes, it's a pain in the ass. All right. Part is a pain in the butt. It didn't come out that way. There are mask requirements, which are completely bogus because they don't work. They put you in a tin can. They pressurize you to 8,000 feet, you know, so you already have a reduced oxygen demand. The rules are you know, pretty crazy. They don't serve food. It's no fun. You know, flying used to be fun. I mean, it really was fun. I mean, you know, granted the airplanes, you know, carried fewer people. But, you know, in the real old days, like the 50s, people actually dressed up, you know, to go flying. I mean, it was a province of the rich, which is not good. I mean, everybody should be able to buy an airline ticket and go where they want to go. All right. But, you know, there's now, you know, you don't want like some, you know, farm animal in the aisle with you from, you know, from some country. And they do that. There are actually airplanes that have farm animals in the aisles. That's the other extreme. So flying should be safe, should be fun. And should, you know, not have the ridiculous regulations that they have now. I mean, it's crazy. You know, and they charge for everything. So, but the other thing is that people forget, that people don't understand that airplanes are expensive. You know, it's some of the best technology in the world. And the idea that you can fly from San Francisco to New York for $50 is just insane. You know, they may do that to kind of lure you in, but then they'll charge you everything else, you know. But you got to figure the fuel costs, the cost of designing the airplane, the rental of the gates at the airport. You know, and they're not paying for the air traffic control system. That's taxpayer paid. That's part of our infrastructure. Speaking of infrastructure, in the same way that taxes pay for the highway system, taxes pay for unless you have a toll road, in which case they're, you know, scooping more money out of your pocket. So the idea of supersonic flight is that it's faster, and that was the attraction. There's the romance of it. You know, oh boy, we're flying supersonic like the fighters, and there's the practical aspect. Well, I have to be in London in 3 hours for a meeting. Okay, so you've got that. But one of the problems, and this is something they really haven't talked about, and I read a bunch of articles on this. One of the things they haven't talked about is the ground component. See, the biggest problem with flying today is not the flying. The jets are still fast. The jets, you know, 500 miles an hour. You know, it doesn't take long. You know, most flights are about an hour and a half, maybe two at the most. Cross country, 5 hours, you know, piece of cake, right? Especially the longer flights are better because you get food and maybe a movie. Still do movies on flying? Airplanes? I don't know. I haven't flown for a while because A, I won't wear a mask, and B, I really haven't had anywhere that I have to be. So I haven't flown for a while. But point being that, you know, by the time you get to the airport hours early, you check in, you know, make sure you don't have water, all the other things you're not supposed to have, you know, you've left your gun at home, hopefully, you know, so you don't walk in, you know, because people who carry, who are used to carrying guns all the time, you know, a lot of times don't think about it. And they're in the briefcases, they're, you know, they're 45. And it's like, uh-oh, that's not good at an airport, right? And so you got to make sure you don't have the things. And then you got to go through security and take off your shoes and other demeaning stuff like that as TSA looks for things that other people have already done, you know, with the ridiculous idea that they'll probably do it again. You know, most terrorists don't think that way. They think about what can we do next that they're not looking for, okay? So this is the problem with the intelligence aspect of searching. Anyway, so you get to the airport, you know, you got traffic to the airport, you got to get there early, you got to park, You know, you might, if you're staying for a while, you might have a distant lot and you got to hop on a shuttle to the airport. You get to the airport, you know, if you have baggage, you know, you got to check that in, you know, and then you have to do this. Then you have to go through security and that might take a while. Then you have to take your shoes up, put your shoes back on, yada, 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 get to your gate. You know, there might be a delay in your flight, you know, so it may take you 4 or 5 hours to get your hour flight. See, that's the problem. So the idea of a supersonic jet, you know, I mean, it's nice to be able to, say London to New York is 6 hours, just make my life easy, right? So New York to London is 6 hours. You know, the Concorde used to do it in 3, all right? Isn't that great? But in those days, you know, you walk in, you sit down, there was no TSA, it was before 9/11. You basically go to the first class lounge, they know who you are. You know, you check in ID, all that kind of stuff. You know, you go through customs, immigration, hop on the plane and off you go. All right. You land at London and you walk out, you know, there's only 100 people, you know, I'm sure they have special baggage claim. You grab your bag, hop your cabbie to London off to your business meeting. All right. So the Concorde used to be great at that because it saved time and it was fun. So rich people like to save time and they like to have fun. Okay. It's something the Democrats don't know how to do. And so supersonic flight was really attractive. And then of course the Russians stole the plans. You know, I don't know how. I mean, I can't prove it. But, you know, you look at the Russian Tupolev 144, looks a whole lot like the Concorde. That's not an accident. Okay. You look at all the Russian airliners. They look exactly like American and British airliners. Well, gee, how'd that happen? Except they come out like 4 or 5 years later. Wow, not bad. So they save all the cost of development. They save all the cost of everything. And they simply steal the plans and make their own. Okay. It's not hard to do. All right. In fact, the Russian MiG-15, here's an airplane story for you. The Russian MiG-15 was stolen. The British gave them an engine. I think they took the design from German jets and like the ME-262. And they basically, so the British were stupid enough to give Russia a jet engine, figuring it would help them with their commerce later on. Well, they put that jet engine in the MiG-15 and shot down a bunch of, you know, British and American and other fighters. And bombers, because it was a really good airplane. Be careful what you give away. You know, you never know. By the way, the British gave away their reflective gun sight too. And so it's another stupid thing that the British politician wanted to impress the Germans with British technology. So they showed them the new gun sight that they had on their fighters, the Spitfire and the Hurricane. All right. And so, this German goes, very interesting. Well, let me take a picture of that. Oh, that's great. So, of course, he brings it back to Germany and they get the same advanced, you know, gun sight in their planes. Oh, boy, using them against Britain and us, you know, later on. So, don't give away your technology. All right. So you look at Russian airliners, you look at Chinese airliners. You know, they all look like they're made by Boeing and Airbus and, you know, British Rolls-Royce engines and things like that. Well, the reason is that they are. They're basically, you know, stolen technology. Or what the Chinese do is they'll say, okay, Boeing, you can build, you know, 3 727s. This is back then. I remember this in particular. No, maybe 4. Build 4 727s. But after that, we'll buy 4 of your 727s. And after that, we're going to buy the planes. And, of course, then they make like, you know, 300. You know, jets themselves, you know, based on the plans that Boeing was stupid enough to sell them. Okay, so, you know, and that's how that works too. So you guys want to fly fast, you know, is it worth it to you? They say it's going to cost, you know, a business class fare. I don't know, but I'll tell you what, these airplanes are gorgeous. You know, I asked Pianki to post on the Action Radio group, which is a public group where you can see the news stories that we are talking about on the show. I think it's fun. If you want to complain about Fauci, you can do that too. I mean, feel free to call. I mean, this hour is pretty much open. I just thought it'd be fascinating to sort of delve into the, you know, would you want to fly on a supersonic airliner? Is it worth it to these airlines, to United and Japan Airlines, to bring it back in? Do you think it would be fun to go 1,400 miles an hour at 60,000 feet? I do. You know, I think it'd be great fun. You know, especially these beautiful individual seats. Check out the video. The video from these airplanes is spectacular. You know, and they're very pointed. They look just like a scaled-down Concorde. All right? So anyway, so back to the Concorde. So the British and the French were trying to be the first to have a supersonic airliner. And so were us, the Americans. Now, the American one never literally got off the ground. You know, so the story of the American SST, as it was called, supersonic transport, was a great design. It was very interesting. It was different than the Concorde, and I'm sure would have been a fine airplane, except the environmentalists said, oh, no, it's too loud. It's got a sonic boom. All the animals will die. The birds will die. Doom and gloom, doom and gloom, doom and gloom, yada, yada, yada. Okay, so there's huge environmental protests. It uses a bunch of fuel. Now, here's something I haven't been able to find out yet. So I'm thinking about this. I said, wait a minute, this plane travels twice as fast. So even if it uses twice as much fuel, it's only in the air half the time. So is it in fact using more fuel? Maybe per passenger, I don't know. So what you really want to find is the per passenger fuel expenditure. So is this airplane, which is in the air half the time, you know, how much fuel is it burning per passenger, you know, where it's flying? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it burns more fuel because it takes, you know, airplanes. There's a formula in aviation, all right? So as the airspeed increases, the drag increases by twice as much, okay? So if you go from 100 miles an hour in the air, or 100 knots, we measure things in knots, and then you go up to 200 knots, you know, you don't have twice the drag because you're going twice as fast. You have four times the drag, okay? So the faster you go, exponentially greater, the more power you need, and the sleeker your airplane has to be, and the more pressure on it, and the more heat on it, the more temperature, you know, everything else like that. So this plane's a whole lot of carbon fiber. So that's the difference. So is it worth it to travel, you know, 1,400 miles an hour at 60,000 feet to save 3 hours to London? I would say yes, especially if you get bored on airplanes. You know, it's not a bad idea. But here's the key, though, that, like I say, I haven't seen this addressed. You better have advanced check-in, and you better have advanced, you know, disembarkation procedures, because otherwise it's not going to work, all right? It's not, you know, if you have to wait 5 hours to get on your plane saving 3 hours, you've already lost your advantage, you know? So they need advanced check-in. If they can get you on the plane in an hour, you know, from when you get to the airport, and get you out of the airport within half an hour, 45 minutes after you arrive, yeah, now it's worth it. You know, but if it takes 6 hours to get on the plane and you have to wait 3 hours afterwards to go through customs, it doesn't matter. The extra 3 hours in a slow lumbering plane doesn't really matter. So that's how that works. All right. Let me start to do some articles here. I should play you a couple of fun things. Speaking of flying, I know. Let me play you my book promo. I wrote a book after a couple of years of flight instruction. I wrote a book called The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction, My Better Way to Teach Flying. So feel free to join in. We're talking aviation today. If you want to call the show, 215-383-3832. I'll be right back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Oh, sounds good to me. All right. Let me just check on a couple of things here. That looks good. That looks good. All right. So I first learned about this when I heard it last week, about this new airliner. And one of the first sources I came across was Fox Business. So it says United Airlines to buy 15 boom supersonic Overture jets. Now the Overture, like I say, if you remember the Concorde, the Delta wing, the droop snoot, the nose that came down because, you know, it flew at such a, what they call a high angle of attack. The nose was so high when it was flying slowly that the pilots couldn't see over it because it's long and pointy. So they had to hinge the nose and angle it down and have a new windscreen pop up. And that's how they were able to take off and land, you know, with that with that lower nose. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, but when they were in supersonic cruise configuration, you know, they have a different windshield pop up, the nose flattens out, and off it would go. All right. So it said, this is Greg Norman yesterday. It says the commercial airline giant announced Thursday that it intends to buy at least 15 Overture jets from Colorado-based Boom Supersonic, capable of traveling at speeds of Mach 1.7, that's about 1,300 miles an hour, and cutting the flight time between Newark and London to just 3.5 hours. United continues on its trajectory to build a more innovative sustainable airline, and today's advancements in technology are making it more viable for that to include supersonic planes. See, this is a fascinating development, I think. This is the CEO, Scott Kirby, sent a statement, Boom's vision for the future of commercial aviation combined with the industry's most robust route network in the world will give business and leisure travelers access to a stellar flight experience. So when the kids ask the question, when am I going to get there? You know, you could say, well, Johnny or Susie, half the time we would have on a regular airliner, we're flying supersonic. You know, I mean, it's kind of a cool thing. You know, I think kids would love it. I think families would love it. I think business people would love it. It's just, you know, anytime we could advance, you know, bigger, better, faster, let's go. Or in this case, smaller, better, faster. Because it only holds about 50 people, maybe 80 at the tops in the, you know, an economy configuration. But I think this will be more likely 50 to 60 of business class passengers. That's what we're talking about here. This should be interesting. I want to see what happens because, you know, you got the environmentalists, you got, you know, the carbon footprint crowd, you've got the you know, you got the CO2 people, you know, all those folks that think that carbon dioxide is a pollutant when it's really plant fertilizer. So there's a lot of education that goes. I should talk to Gregory Wrightson about this. It might be kind of interesting. Here we go. So next section, supersonic boom could take off faster with new FAA rule. That's FAA. That's the Federal Aviation Administration. Under the agreement, United says it will buy 15 of Boom Supersonic's high-speed aircraft, quote, once Overture meets United's demanding safety, operating, and sustainability requirements, with an option for an additional 35 airplanes. Okay, I only think they built like maybe 20 Concords tops. You know, so they're already talking about more here for United than they had of the entire Concorde fleet, which is not very big. All right, back to the quote. Once operational, Overture is expected to be the first large commercial aircraft to be net zero carbon from day one, optimized to run on 100% sustainable aviation fuel. Company added a statement, it is slated to roll out in 2025, fly in 2026, and expected to carry passengers in 2029. Okay, not too bad. You know, they're going to have to work on it. I mean, it takes a while to work the bugs out and make it work. I want to know what this is, sustainable aviation fuel is. All right. You know, what, is it synthetic? Are they making more of it? You know, sustainable usually means regenerative. So if you have a sustainable forest, if you cut trees down, they grow back, or new trees grow back. All right. So is sustainable aviation fuel, once you burn it, does it regenerate? How does that work exactly? So this seems like I'm very curious what that term is. I've been looking. I haven't quite come across it. But as we research these airplanes more and more, we'll find out. So here we go. Besides Newark to London, United also says the Overture aircraft could fly between Newark to Frankfurt, Germany, in 4 hours, and San Francisco to Tokyo in 6 hours. See, they can't fly across the United States, you know, because of the boom. So Boom's airplane makes a boom, but it's a littler airplane. I mean, this is half the size of the Concorde, so ideally it would have half the boom. You know, and as noisy as our cities and stuff are, would people even notice a sonic boom? I don't know. They should fly it across the country and find out. This is what I would do, but that's me. Supersonic commercial flight has been on a hiatus since October 2003 when the famed Concorde jet flew its last route. Yeah, see, the problem with the Concorde is it ended tragically. The last flight, they picked up something in the tire, or a piece of tire broke off, got into the engine quit, caught on fire, and really horrible stuff happened. The plane crashed and everybody on board died. So that was not good. And so that's, and that really ended the Concorde. After that, there was no recovery from that. All right. But now, now we got this really cool looking little needle. Basically, if you go to Action Radio, the Action Radio group, we literally call that the Action Radio group, you will see this pointy nose airplane. The jets are in the back. There's a couple of jets underneath and one in the tail. So it's a three jet thing carrying 50 passengers. So let me talk about the Overture. So let's look up one of these jets. Let's give you some propaganda from the Boom Corporation. Oh, lovely video. Scrolling down. The fastest and most sustainable supersonic airliner. A dramatically more accessible world begins with Overture. Flights twice as fast enable us to experience more people, places, and cultures. Well, what it really experiences is getting out of the damn airplane faster. All right. Overture is the first airliner in a new era of enduring supersonic flight. We're building on Concorde's legacy through faster, more efficient, and sustainable technology. Isn't that word sustainable again? All right. So here's some specifications. You take a look at this thing. It's got a delta wing. It's got two jets under the wing, one in the tail. There's no elevators. They're all, you know, the flaps in the tail are both the ailerons, which make you bank left and right, and the elevators, which make the nose go up and down. doesn't necessarily make the plane go up and down. It makes the nose go up and down. Those are both the same control in the tail. And it's got a rudder. All right? And the rudder sort of makes up for the other problems. So rudders on jets really aren't a big deal like they are on propeller planes, because propeller planes don't have all these weird gyroscopic effects because of the propeller. Jets don't have that problem. So rudders on jets are kind of like an afterthought. You know, they help you start the turn, help you stop the turn, but that's about it. All right. Passenger capacity, 65 to 88. Length, 205 feet. Cruising altitude, 60,000 feet. Wait a minute.
Let me reach back here and get a calculator.
I want to find out how high that is. So 60,000 feet, 5,280 feet in a mile. So 60,000 divided by 5,280 is 11.36 miles. It's almost 12 miles above, it's just over 11 miles above Earth. Normally, airliners fly about 35,000 feet, which is about 7 miles above the Earth. So you got 4 miles above the airliners below you. That's good separation. That's pretty good. Speed is Mach 1.7. So sound travels, so I think 1,400 roughly is twice the speed of sound. So this thing's probably like 1,250. All right. Not bad. Carbon net zero. I can do some more research. I got to find out what the hell they're talking about here. This thing is not putting out carbon. Or net zero. So in other words, it gets rid of as much as it generates. That seems to me physically impossible. All right. But carbon's not a bad thing. See, this is the problem. I wonder if they're weasel wording this somehow to say that, we don't have, we're not putting out any more carbon. We're like I said, it's zero. So whatever the carbon went into it, or I don't know how they do that. I'm kind of curious. Anyway, it's got a pretty good range, 4,250 nautical miles, 4,888 statute miles. Well, that's enough to get San Francisco to Tokyo and New York to London. They do what they call the Great Circle Route. So they don't fly as you would think they would normally fly. They fly in an arc, over the top of the world, rather than flying directly across in latitude. So it's faster. More specs. Passenger experience. Oh, you got to see this cabin, right? So you got this screen on the back of the chair in front of you. You got this lovely table. You got this little console beside you. You've got your headset. You've got lights. You've got, this big window. And this little fufu plate that looks like something out of Demolition Man with the, Taco Bell, with the little appetizer thingies there. All right. This is fun. Anyway, so Overture will offer an unparalleled combination of tranquility, comfort, and productivity from takeoff to landing. Josie's on the line, and we're almost there. Almost done with this article, and I'll get to her. And you also have stratospheric views. See, this is the propaganda, okay, so I'm just reading right from their website. See the darkness of space above and curvature of the Earth below, cruising at 60,000 feet. It's all business class, so you get large personal windows, direct aisle access, and an environment curated for comfort. So there's only one seat on either side of the airplane, okay? So you got a middle aisle, and it's single seats on either side. This thing looks like fun. Anyway, and there's another company doing private jets as well, but so the airliner, arrive at half the time for reduced jet lag and more time where it matters, which is cool. All right, let's get to Josie and let's see if she wants to, if it's worth pursuing supersonic airplanes. Josie, you want to go fast? What do you think?
Heck yeah. especially when I do my mission trips in the Ukraine, it's a long, long flight. So, I always complain they should put special little things to massage your feet because your feet get so tired, 10 hours. Fly from Charlotte to Germany, and from Germany another 3 hours to Kia. So it's a two-day flight, really, because you have to wait I don't know how many hours in Germany to change your flight. So it's a long, long trip. And then 3 hours by car. So you're, like, exhausted to get to destination.
Yeah. Well, I just did a quick calculation as you were talking. This thing can only stay up for about 4 hours. All right, because that it was going 1,200 miles an hour with about a 4,800 mile range. That's 4 hours, give or take. I mean, it's not exact, but you're not going to be on that plane for 10 hours because it can't fly that long. But in those 10 hours, it can go, in 4 hours, at 1,200 miles an hour. That's 4,800 miles, so you can cross the country in probably 2.5 hours. 2,500 miles roughly across the United States. Yeah. Now the problem is the boom. So here's a question for you. Do you think the environmentalists, you know, are right that they don't want to have any sonic boom, or would a certain level of sonic boom be completely tolerable given the fact that we have ambulances and trucks and, you know, all the other stuff going on, construction, you know, jackhammers? You know, this is obviously a rhetorical question, but how much of a problem do you think the sonic boom really is or really was, or did environmentalists just not want us, you know, to have the capability to go that fast? What do you think?
They don't want anything, you know. The environmentals, they don't want planes, they don't want anything.
Mm-hmm.
But they do,
except for themselves.
They have to do their vacations.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio flew to Paris for the whatever the climate change thing was. Al Gore flies all
exactly.
the time in his private jet. Yeah.
They don't want for us to have anything, but they like guns. They
mm-hmm.
are protected by their security, but they don't want for us to be protected. So these
mm-hmm.
people are so hypocrite with everything.
This really raises a really great point. Do you think that Nancy Pelosi, God forbid she was still Speaker when one of these things came out, but do you think that that members of Congress are going to claim that they are so important that they can get back to their district faster on a supersonic airplane, that that's a justifiable expense? What do you think?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they'll go for it. Yeah.
Hmm.
And talking about planes, do you remember 1982, the Air Florida crash at the Potomac River?
Yes, I do.
76 people on board.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Air Florida Airlines?
Yep, Lenny Skutnik was the one who jumped in to save the people. I remember it very well. He was honored by Reagan. Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
the first woman that they pull out was, it's one of my best friends, actually. Her name
is my goodness.
Shelley
Moore now. Wow.
Yes. She was a flight attendant, 19 years old, and she said the last thing she remembered, flight attendant, we're ready for takeoff. She remember putting her seatbelt, sitting down, taking off, and boom, crashing into cold water. She was the first one that they pulled out in the helicopter, and her hands were so frozen she couldn't hardly get a hold of the rope.
Huh.
And
hypothermia, you just lose all control.
Yeah.
How many people died in that? I mean, I don't mean to get, you know, crazy.
Only five people survived out of 76,
wow.
75 or 76.
Yeah.
And she was rushed to the hospital in D.C. immediately. And
mm-hmm.
the neatest thing is she was in the hospital with a lot of bruises. And what happened is a nurse walked in very soft and gentle in the room after she was there for a few hours. And she led her to Jesus. Until this day, my friend, Kelly, she's looking for that nurse, and she could never find that nurse. It's kind of
that's
crazy.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, the nurse did the mission. The nurse did what she needed to do, so that's fascinating. Yeah, there's a saying that there are no, you know, atheist pilots, because all of us go through an experience, either
exactly.
a life-changing or a life-endangering experience. And I've
mm-hmm.
had my share of emergencies when I was teaching flying, you know, stuff
yeah.
happens. And so there's not a pilot alive who hasn't prayed to God at some point, you know, in their flying career, just because, you know, you need the help. And so you think you're doing it on your own. You're really not. But there's something about flying, too. And this is why you should take a lesson, and or I'll get you up when I start flying again. There's something magical.
Love that. Yeah.
What's that?
Mm-hmm.
Have you
My
flown a small plane?
I love that.
Okay. Well, I'll
yeah.
take them up, too. Yeah, yeah. Especially when I get Action Radio 1, our jet.
Mm-hmm.
You will fly upside down over the beach, yeah. But there's something about flying that brings you, I think, closer to God in many ways, because you get very spiritual up there. And there's something about, I used to describe it as feeling big, you know, because you can be sitting in a little tiny airplane, but you see this whole world spread out in front of you, and you feel huge. You know, it's like all of a sudden you're reaching, whatever you see, you feel a part of. And if you can see a couple hundred miles and you feel a part of that couple hundred miles, a couple hundred miles in any direction is thousands and thousands of square miles of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and when you fly
wow.
beside the cloud, when you fly beside the clouds or you fly in the clouds, because I was an instrument pilot, right? So I had to train people to fly in the clouds. And one of the prettiest things in the world is to pop out of the clouds, you know, where you're in the front and you can actually see the windshield. So what we do sometimes you know, I talk to air traffic control and I say, and I pick an altitude where we were right in the, just on top of the cloud layer. So the clouds would be like whisping over the top of us. It would be like surfing the clouds.
Yeah.
You know, it would be right on the layers. It was great fun. And so I miss it. It's time for me to get back in the air, obviously. But we'll get to that as Action Radio grows. But as someone that doesn't fly, the romance of flying, I think we've lost part of our American dream, part of our American spirit is wrapped up in flying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Americans loved air shows. They still love air shows, but it's more passive.
Yeah.
They don't think that they can learn anymore. They don't. We have much fewer pilots than we ever had before. People, they don't see flying as a romance anymore. It's like, oh, God, I've got to fly. You know, it's like the worst part of their trip. And it used to be one of the best parts of people's trips. You know, kids are like, I'm going on an airplane. You know, grown-ups are like, hey, this is fun. I'm taking my first flight, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 mm-hmm. years ago. And we've lost the romance.
Yeah.
It's become like a cattle. You know, it's like a cattle truck.
Yeah.
And
all right.
Oh, it's fly sporting now. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, when I was coming back from Nick, you sound like a vaca, cow. When I was coming back on one of my trips from Nicaragua, where everybody's having their snack, and I think it was dinner that we were having, and a lot of people were, you know, they get drunk on wine, and let me tell you, we went through a bad weather, turbulent. And
uh-huh.
everything was flying in the air, like all the food, the drinks. I mean, everybody was praying and crying, like you said. People really get very religious up in the sky.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. The passengers get religious, too. I'll tell you a funny story. This is where pilots need to explain what goes on in airplanes more, because I was flying with my daughter. We were actually taking a cruise on a Windjammer, you know, a little Bahamas sailing ship. All right. And so we flew up from the West Coast, from California, and we're coming into Florida, and California doesn't get a lot of thunderstorms. We just don't. You know, we get like about 4 or 5 mm-hmm. days of rain, and that's it for the year. All right. So they don't know storms in California. So we're flying in, and it's bumpy because it's evening and the big clouds are there. And, you know, mm-hmm. we're looking around, and all of a sudden you see these flashes off these clouds. All right. And my daughter's like, are we going to die? Is that lightning? I said, no, you're not. It's just a light under the airplane. So this is strobe light. All you're seeing is a reflection of the light on the clouds. Oh, thank you. And of course, the woman in front of me, oh, thank you. I didn't know that. I'm like, wow. And everybody else is like, oh, thanks. You know, they appreciate that because they all thought it was lightning too. Right. You know, so all these people are panicked every time you fly into Florida with the big clouds. You know, all it is a strobe light. It's a white light under the airplane. It's a position light, but they shouldn't have it on in the clouds because nobody can see you anyway. All you do is scare the passengers. But this is where they don't do a good job of informing people what's happening, you know, unless there's a problem or unless you're, you know, Captain Sully Sullenberg that landed, you know, on the Hudson River, mm-hmm. brace for impact. You know, and say, well, we're going to be landing in the river. Yeah, I don't know what he said, but that's one of those times. But, yeah, flying, that's the bad part about flying. People forget the good part. It's fun. At least it used to be. And there was a romance to it. There was a romance. Even those old prop jobbers, which had, you know, more engine problems than the jets. Jets are ridiculously reliable, you know. But we've lost our romance for flying and our romance for travel. It's now like
a Greg,
job.
It is.
Yeah.
It is fine until they try to mess you up with, like, my husband's unit, the H-60s helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
They were giving a ride to all the wives, and they got crazy, and I almost started vomiting because they were doing all this little up and down, you know, to kind of get us sick on purpose, you know. So I was not happy at all.
That was dumb. That was amazingly stupid.
They were having fun with the wives.
Yeah, they think they're funny. People don't realize airliners, you know, or small airplanes especially. You know, I've done loops, I've done rolls, I've done spins. I've been up in a steerman, which is a World War II aerobatic trainer. That's what they trained the pilots on before they went to the T-6 Texan, before they went to the Mustangs, you know, the fast airplanes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the steerman is probably one of the strongest airplanes ever built. It can take 12 Gs, all right? It's an amazingly, you know, versatile, incredibly strong airplane. And I told a pilot one day, I said, you know, this is before I became an instructor. I said, show me everything. He gets this big smile on his face. He says, everything? I said, yeah, everything. I said, okay. You know, so we go, but this is open cockpit, right? So I got the helmet, the goggles, the whole bit, right? And we've got this little mirror so he can look at me. And he says, I'm going to do three routines.
Oh, my
God. And I said, after each one, I'll look at you. And if you give me a thumbs up, then the next one's going to be, you know, more extreme than the first, than the one before. I'm like, okay. So we do the first one. And, kind of, and I learned how to sort of like put my head back against the seat, seat rest and just relax. Just go wherever the airplane went, I went with it, right? So you become a part of the airplane. And we flipped and rolled and looped and who knows what we did. All I know is the ground was spinning in various angles. I'm like, wow, this is kind of cool. So then he rolls out level. He looks at me and I look at him and I give him a thumbs up. That was great. Let's do more. He's like, oh, okay. Then he really starts yanking the plane around. And I wasn't sick. I felt fine because I learned how to relax. I mean, if you relax and just go with it, you don't get sick. Just like a car. Same kind of thing, except we were upside down sideways. We were wings over wings and spinning and, you know, rolling inverted. We were upside down more than we were right side up. It was great. And of course, when you're upside down in an open cockpit biplane, what? Go ahead.
So you're probably pretty good doing roller coasters, huh, Greg?
I don't like roller coasters. I mean, they don't bother me physically. But I don't like the concept of them because I feel safer with wings up high in the air because I understand the physics. All right. So what bothers me about roller coasters, especially the old wooden ones, is they sound like they're falling apart when I ride on them. And I've ridden on one wooden one.
I know.
I said, that's it. I'm done. You know, you know, who knows if Biff, the operator, you know, who's on whatever, you know, medication he's on, you know, checked the bolts that morning. I mean, I don't know. I'd much rather be able to, you know, see with an airplane. With an airplane, it's different. They have required maintenance.
Yeah.
They have all kinds of inspections. You know, the pilot goes over, especially the aerobatic pilot. And this guy's really good. It's vintage aircraft in Sonoma County. So it's right next to Napa County where the winery is. They're still there. So go see Chris. Chris is the owner. He's the one that took me up. And Chris is an amazing pilot. And they got a P-40 out there now, too. Pianchi's on the line. I knew he'd call in. Anyway,
he should. He's a
pilot, too. Yeah, so exactly, yeah. Anyway, so the point is, in this beautiful steerman, when you're upside down in a steerman, because it's open cockpit, when you look up, there's the ground. When you look down, there's the sky. And the view from it, at least everybody should at one point in their life go up in an open cockpit biplane. Now, you don't have to flip it around like we did. I did it for a reason. I wanted to make sure that when I got to teaching students, that they never scared me. And I said, I told the pilot, this is what I'm doing. I said, I want you to show me everything. So when I get with a student, no matter what happens in the airplane, I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to worry about it because I've been there with you.
Yeah.
He says, good plan.
Wow.
So he literally showed me stuff that we couldn't do in the regular air. But you never know. Stuff happens, right? You get caught in what's called a wingtip vortice. It's like a tornado that comes off the airplane, airliner wings. You get caught in that, and all those rules about not being too much bank and not being too much, you know, nose angle, they go out the window because it'll flip you right over, you know. And so you have to be able to be able to handle that, and it actually works. After that, you know, no matter what the students did, it's like, hey, I've been up in the steering
wheel.
I've done more than we can do in this airplane, and I was fine. So it actually worked out. Let's get Pianchi and see if he wants to fly fast.
Yeah,
I think I know the answer to this one. Pianchi, welcome to our supersonic airliner chat. What do you think?
Yeah, I was kind of napping and dozing off, and I thought I heard a cow at the door, and I went and nothing.
That was just me.
Oh, that was good.
Those are people. Flight 68, now boarding. You're bad.
Am I dreaming about? You thought you were dreaming about cows, huh?
Yeah. How you doing, Joseph?
I'm good, Yankee.
That's
Go
good,
ahead. What do
good.
You think about the supersonic?
I don't know. It's kind of long. It looks like it's a buckle in the middle of me if you don't balance it out just right.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, it only carries 50, and I'm not sure how critical. I guess it – well, see, here's the thing. Now, this is something I learned from the old 707s. Back when airplanes had a flight engineer, they used to have to balance the fuel. So on a 707, which is still the best airplane ever made as far as I'm concerned in terms of airlines, DC-3 and the 707, you know, and then the early 747s, they're the best. And on a 707, you had to balance the fuel. So in other words, they had to select the tanks. So 707 has like seven or eight tanks. It's probably got, I think it's seven, you know, three in each wing and then one in the center. And they had to balance it out because you have to maintain what's called a center of gravity. It's the balance point. You know, on a teeter-totter, right, or a seesaw, if you put equal weights on both sides, you know, they'll balance. Think of the center of your seesaw as what we call the center of gravity. It's where the gravity acts. It's where the airplane is balanced, and that's where it turns from, climbs from, descends from. All the forces of an airplane act through the center of gravity. So if it's too far back, your nose is going to pitch up, and you're going to stall out and you're going to crash because you can't lower the nose to keep the air going over the wings. If it's too far forward, you'll never lift the nose and you're going to go off the end of the runway into whatever's off the end of the runway. So it's critical to maintain balance. So in an airplane like the 707, you know, they could have let it go out of balance if the flight engineer wasn't on top of, you know, the fuel. And of course, they had formulas. They had, you know, it wasn't that tough to do it, but they still had to do it manually. Later airplanes, when they had two pilots instead of three, you had the pilot and the co-pilot, the fuel would, computers do it. So computers balance the fuel automatically. So I imagine this brand new airliner is going to have the most sophisticated computers. It's going to take into account the most accurate center of gravity balancing and balance the fuel automatically and just draw from the tanks to make sure that it's they keep it in that what they call the envelope of center of gravity. Make sense?
I don't know.
You sit back
at
the farm animals.
Bianchi,
you still there? I was done.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Can I make a mention?
Sure.
I just wanted to make mention that yesterday was a commemoration of D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And my hat goes off to all those that made it possible for me to be here today and listen to the cows.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's funny. I traveled to Normandy and went to Caen and some of these other places, you know, that where the D-Day landing was. I was within a few miles of it. And it's a fascinating thing. The French still, you know, if you're an American and you go to Normandy or Brittany in France, you know, where we landed at D-Day, they still, you know, congratulate you, thank you, and even if you had no part of it. And my family, you know, being Canadian and Australian, weren't there at D-Day. I don't have a relative that was there, but they don't care. You're American, you know, thank you. And so people don't realize that. They think, you know, they're the French. But you got to understand, these people, you know, they think they owe their lives to us because of D-Day. And have you seen the memes? There was one, you know, it said this was the day of the beach, you know, June 6th, 1944. And this is what people are afraid of today. And it had like some, you know, millennial in a mask, you know, for a disease with a 99.99 survival rate for millennials. It's like we're a bunch of cowards now. Well, no, we aren't. But we're a nation of cowards, cowering in fear for a virus that is you know, half as strong as a flu bug, unless you're of a particular, you know, vintage age, at which point you're vulnerable to all the other bugs too. So
yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And Greg, I'm so excited with the news about Fauci. He's going down very quickly, let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, that's
praise
why I'm not talking
God.
About him. Everybody else is talking
yeah.
about it, so I don't have to. We've done our mission. We're ahead of the news. Now we're going to get more ahead of the news
yeah,
because the here's what's coming. Here's what I'm looking into: Moderna, the origins of the vaccine. We're going to go heavily into that. I'm going to see if I can get Dr. David Martin on the show. Okay, we're going to try and get Robert Francis Kennedy on the show from Children's Health Defense. You know, I've already talked to those folks. I've submitted our bills. You know, on reforming the FDA, actually overhauling the FDA,
yeah.
and full product liability for vaccine manufacturers. So there's a lot of stuff going on. You know,
mm-hmm.
again, folks, what you hear
good.
On the show is like about a tenth of what we do. Okay, there's so much going on behind the scenes. We're actually a lobbying advocacy organization as well as a radio show. We just report it and talk about it on the show. Now,
yeah.
let me get the bad news on supersonic airliners. This is from National Public Radio. This is your taxes paying for socialism to destroy our economy and take away our jets, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is from June 3rd, 2021, so just a couple of days ago. United Airlines wants to revive supersonic travel, but what about climate change? Oh, they're whimpering, the NPR folks. The National Socialists are saying, we can't fly fast because what about climate change? Here's the article. This was hysterical. United Airlines. Let me give you my best, my NPR voice. And now let's talk NPR. United Airlines announced Thursday that it will purchase 15 supersonic airliners from a Denver-based startup that would fly 65 to 85 passengers at record speed. Do, 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 do. Whatever the national, that's Jeopardy. What's the theme from NPR? And now all things considered. Make that. All things socialist considered. All right,
mm-hmm.
back to the article. Dubbed the Overture. I love that name for this thing. The new aircraft from Boom Supersonic, as opposed to the Supersonic Boom, which is kind of interesting play on words, is designed to travel at 1.7 times the speed of sound, or 1,300 miles an hour, twice as fast as current airliners. That means it could complete transcontinental flights roughly half the time, except these socialist environmental folks, they're not going to let it fly over the country. We just talked about that because of the sonic boom. Bianchi, help
mm-hmm.
me out here. How loud is a sonic boom on a fighter? Have you ever heard one? I haven't. Well, I think I have, but it was pretty quiet. Bianchi, Everyday Sonic Booms? She's not there.
Haven't heard one since I was a kid.
Okay. And how was it a fighter, and how loud was it? Did it shock the neighborhood? Did it break the windows?
It was a phantom.
Okay. And,
I lived near McDonald Douglas.
Okay. So any property damage, any broken windows, anything when it went boom?
No, back in them days, glass was stronger.
I wasn't expecting that. Well, that's interesting. Okay. So we've got new plexiglass. We don't want to shatter the solar panels. We don't want to upset the liberals. But that's the question, you know, that I have to do some research. How loud is a sonic boom these days? If this thing's half the size of the Concorde, is there any reason why it shouldn't travel from Los Angeles to New York, for example? You know, is there a flight path over the country it could take where there's pretty much nothing below it, you know, what they call flyover country for a reason? You know, you just bypass Kansas, and you know, between Kansas and New Orleans, there's probably some space you could go. There's not a lot of stuff. Right?
Well, you know, back in those days, glass was stronger and lightning bugs were more plentiful. So different today. You
okay.
Got environmentalists like Josie mentioned. So we live in a different world. I would like to hear the sonic boom. It would scare the hell out of people.
So we won't vote for sonic booms. Do we have any socialists who'd like to call in against sonic booms? I'm really, really sarcastic today, you can tell. Well, let's see if I can get you some of the bad news here. The fate of commercial supersonic flight has been in question since the British Airways and Air France retired the ultra-fast Concorde jet in 2003, citing sinking revenues and rising operational costs. The decision followed a 2000 crash in Paris of a chartered Air France Concorde jet that left 113 dead. Yeah, that was a real tragedy. I mean, I've seen, they actually have pictures of it exploding. It's amazing. But the Concorde was a revolution. The Concorde was a British-French, you know, aerospatial collaboration. In fact, we could have had our own supersonic jet, except the environmentalists, you know, killed it. But the truth about the Concorde was it was old technology. It was designed from blueprints, not computers. They used slide rules in the calculations, and it was flying in 1973. That's a long time ago. You know, they didn't have calculators in 1973, and yet they produced this airplane that was supersonic. Not bad, huh?
Well, the B-52 go back to the 1950s. You know,
yeah, but they're not
this
supersonic.
This nation has made some big strides in aviation since the flight at Kitty Hawk.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, here's what's interesting, too. Let me get back to the NPR folks. This is returning supersonic commercial planes to the air raises environmental questions. One big difference this time around is that the world's focus on tackling climate change and the aviation industry has faced scrutiny for its considerable carbon footprint. Even among aircraft, supersonic jets are known for their unusually high emissions. They fly high in the atmosphere, where the air is thinner and burn more fuel than traditional planes in order to reach their extreme speeds. Okay, so if the air is thinner, how do they know they're burning more fuel? If the air is thinner, the resistance is less. You can go faster. You can pack more air into your engines, and there's less drag. And they're in the air half the time. So how do they know they're burning more fuel? So there's my question for you, Bianchi. Pilot calculation. Are they calculating the fuel burn rate and not taking into account the fact these jets are in the air half the time? So in other words, are they burning the same amount of fuel per passenger? You know, if you got a 6-hour flight in an airliner and these boom jet takes 3 hours, you're in the air half the time. So are you in fact burning less fuel simply because you're in the air half the time, even though you're burning more fuel per mile because you're going so much faster? Has that been taken into account? And there was silence on the radio. I think I better keep talking. Josie, what do you think? If you're in there half the time, does that make a difference?
I don't know much about it,
okay, well, that's fine.
I don't know much about
it. All right.
I'm not the expert.
Oh, I think the expert's bad.
Well, I don't know. I would have to take time to look at it.
Okay, I'm looking at it, too. So here we go. It says, and it also says, this is NPR, don't forget. It says, as a result, the Concorde generated 3 times more of the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide than conventional planes, according to Climate House News, Climate Home News. So the question is, here's the real question. This is where I need Gregory Wrightstone. Let's see if I can contact him. What the hell is the problem with carbon dioxide? It's plant food. If these jets generate more carbon dioxide, do they really believe that 20 supersonic jets that are smaller then a 747 is going to have, you know, more, you know, emissions, even though they're in the air half the time and they're flying a whole lot higher up, you know. So does that mean it's going to have more greenhouse effect higher up? I doubt it. You know, you're going to see contrails for these things all the time. You can know exactly where they are and what's going on. And then they can measure anything they want to measure from these airplanes. It doesn't make sense to me that they're panicking over something that's not a pollutant. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. So in other words, if we go to the Supreme Court and say, okay, Supreme Court, you idiots, you morons, you fools who know nothing about science, you know, stop, you know, you have to reverse your decision declaring carbon dioxide a pollutant. Carbon dioxide is a gas that plants breathe in so they can make, you know, sugar through photosynthesis. That's why they do it. They breathe out oxygen so that we can breathe in oxygen, so we can breathe out carbon dioxide, so plants can make more plants through photosynthesis. Anybody not understand that? This is pretty basic, you know, high school biology.
Well, I don't know why the Supreme Court's ruling on something like that anyway, if that's the case.
Yep, that's a better question. Oh, here we go. A report from NASA earlier this year cited numerous environmental hazards of faster-than-sound commercial travel. Now, was that a Biden insurrection paper, or was that a Trump one? I can't imagine Trump did this, so I have to look that up. Although the paper did not examine specific designs such as booms. Okay, so NASA says the supersonic flights are a greater hazard, but they haven't checked out the new airplanes. Now, the new airplanes are lighter and faster, and they're carbon fiber, and they're using titanium and all kinds of other technology, and they're computerized. They're using all kinds of things that the Concorde didn't have. So I wonder if they're comparing apples and oranges, if they're comparing, you know, horse and buggies to 1959 Corvettes, you know, as a rough equivalent.
Yeah, those fiberglass body Corvettes was neat, weren't they?
Well, that's, you know, I didn't think of that. But, yeah, they were new bodies sell fiberglass, right? So these new airplanes are carbon fiber. Carbon's useful, folks. It's not just carbon dioxide, okay? We are a carbon-based life form. Without carbon, we'd be dead, okay? Just to throw that in. Josie, you have something on this?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm listening to you, too.
Isn't this fun? So here's something I found, too. So back to the NPR article. All things considered, National Public Radio, bringing socialism to you every day. Boom officials say the Overture will be able to fly on sustainable aviation fuels. And the acronym is SAF, and be the first commercial plane to immediately reach net zero carbon emissions. So what are the environmentalists worried about? It's got sustainable fuels and net zero carbon emissions, all right? I have no idea how that works, but I'm curious now. The company partnered with a new firm called Prometheus Fuels, which says its manufacturing process pulls carbon dioxide from the air in what is called direct air carbon capture and converts it into gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Boom announced the partnership as it was developing the first demonstrator aircraft, the XB-1. Okay, now if I read this correctly, they actually take carbon out of the air to make their gasoline, thereby if they're putting it back in the air when they burn it, the net result is zero because they're putting back exactly what they took out of the air to make the fuel in the first place. Is that what they're saying?
That sounds
is that
about
what you
right.
Guys? Okay. Josie? Being the scientist
well, that's
you are?
What it sounds like.
Okay.
That's what it sounds like.
So that's a revolution. So if this thing is burning net zero carbon, what are the environmentalists worried about? It's not creating carbon. Hmm. It's actually taking carbon to make the fuel, all right, direct air carbon capture. Now I have to research this. I'll probably report on this sometime too, because I mean, a lot of this is new to me, all right? And then when they burn it, it goes back. It's like if you take carbon for your car. If this process works, they could do this with cars. They could do this with gasoline, with diesel, with everything. You know, that would make here's something interesting. Now, how about all those folks with electric cars, all right? Now, do electric power plants, are they going to use net zero fuel? Or are they just going to burn coal the old-fashioned way? So what if petroleum-based fuels that use direct air carbon capture, because aviation usually leads automotive technology. What happens in an airplane happens in a car, you know, several years later, right? Streamlining aerodynamics, all that kind of stuff. Started with airplanes. You know, the reason your cars all look like little bubbles today is because what happened with airplanes? Because you go faster through the air if you're streamlined, all right? There's lower drag, even though, as I mentioned earlier, drag is four times the airspeed. So if you go from 100 to 200 miles an hour, you double your airspeed, but you increase your drag by four times. That's why it's so important for airplanes to be smooth, okay? Oh, I'm just full of information today. I was a flight instructor. I didn't know this stuff, right? Anyway, so it says the method was discovered by German chemists in the 1920s. Huh? Wait a minute. They've had the ability of direct air carbon capture since the 1920s, and we're just hearing about it now in the 2020s. This is 100 years later. We could have. So there's your petroleum. There's your lobbyist for the petroleum industry, because they wanted to burn petroleum. They didn't want to have to, and they wanted to go find more. They didn't want to have to actually capture direct air carbon capture. This is fascinating. This is why competition is the best thing, you know, for industry, because now we've discovered a technology that's 100 years old. That we could have been using all this time and never had to worry about a carbon footprint. I just discovered this article this morning. This is why, you know, I'm reading it for the first time. This is why I sound like I'm reading it for the first time. The method was discovered by German. method was discovered by German scientists in the 1920s, according to Science Magazine, is referred to as synthesizing gasoline. Remember the Nazis used to do that? They were looking for synthetic gasoline. This must have been how they're working on it. In the early 20th century, the process required coal, heat, and pressure. Under its updated method, this is why the Germans could never do it, right, in World War II. Under its updated method, Prometheus says it uses water, air, and electricity derived from renewable energy sources to make fuel. So they actually make fuel from renewable fuel. Not bad. This is kind of cool. Go ahead, Pianki.
We use carbon dioxide in aerial fueling, where the teeter comes in, makes contact with the plane, and just before it cuts loose, they shoot a surge of carbon dioxide in order to arrest any sparks that would cause an explosion. So they also use it in they also use it in powerhouses too. And okay, I can't remember exactly how, but it's all based on it. It arrests any possibility for an explosion. So.
Well, that makes sense. That makes the fuel safer, which is a good thing. You know, that's why diesel was invented. I mean, diesel is another German invention. You know, I think Hans Diesel or whatever his first name was. Diesel invented diesel fuel, and it's far less explosive. It's far safer to use and develops much more power, but it takes a while to get cranked up. That's why they use it on big trucks and trains and large ships, you know, diesel-powered submarines in World War II. Diesel is a different kind of fuel. It's not as practical for little cars that have to accelerate and stop much more quickly. You know, so it's good on big engines, but it's a lot safer to use. Anyway, because it says, lastly here, because the company pulls carbon dioxide from the air and doesn't emit any greenhouse gases during the creation of its fuels, it greatly reduces the impact of any carbon emissions given off during the burning of its fuels. So if the fuel isn't a problem, then what's the problem? The only thing left for the environmentalists is the fact that they fly high and they make a sonic boom. But how big is the sonic boom going to be from 60,000 feet? That's 11 plus miles up.
Well, it would take a lot to create a sonic boom at 60,000 feet. That's flight level. The air is thinner and it's a lot colder. Boy, it would be hauling butt to do that.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's too bad Peter Pry couldn't be on the show, because I was going to ask him about the physics of supersonic flight. That'll probably be next week's Monday episode when I have him on the show, because that's his ballpark. But it seems to me that the socialists have actually answered their own questions in looking into this to try and prove that it's environmentally dangerous. They've actually answered the question that it's environmentally safe. That's fascinating. I find that fascinating. Okay. So additionally, Boom said it would use carbon offsets to make the XB1 program carbon neutral. It was also vowed to design the Overture in a more efficient way so it requires less fuel, and to investigate how to make the aircraft as recyclable as possible so it can be repurposed at the end of its operational life. See, the thing is, people don't realize technology is advancing so fast. We're finding new ways to do things so fast that the old problems really become a matter of the old attitudes. They're not really problems anymore. The problems have been solved. So the real problem is changing the attitudes to match the current reality and stop dealing with problems that have already gone away, I think.
The problem are them. And the problem with the radical left that wants to be against everything, I think they're bored. They want to come up with something all the time to be against, you know, regular cars, regular gasoline. They want electric cars. These people are bored, and they don't have a clue about what they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, it really comes to control. I mean, they're so obsessed with control, they don't want us to do anything, to have any fun, All right, take a minute. Breathe in, everybody. I'm going to read the rest of this article real quickly here, and I want to play at least something so folks know what we do here. I'll be right back in a minute.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
I just want to take this opportunity to say on behalf of Action Radio, we are for supersonic transportation, whether it's new business jets or whether it's airliners. We say go for it, okay? Because
go
it seems like
it.
They're answering. Yeah. Yeah, go for it. Bianchi, what do you think? Go for it? This will be like
go
America's Got Talent. Go for it. Good. This will be like America's Got Talent. This will be, instead we'll do our own little game show, America's Got Airliners. All right.
Mm-hmm.
The last little bit's interesting. It says sustainable fuel is one of the pathways to limiting emissions growth in the industry. And that's according to this person, Doug Vine, Director of Energy Analysis at the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions. Yeah, sounds liberal. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, recently, quote, took steps to regulate emissions by commercial aircraft, though the plan was met with skepticism by environmentalists. Well, that's interesting. What the environmentalists didn't support the plan by the EPA, but they don't think it went far enough? We'll investigate that. Here's the thing we talked about earlier. In addition to carbon emissions generated by planes, advocates have also warned about the harmful effects of sonic booms on people and animals nearby. So my question is, if this thing flies at 60,000 feet, how many people and animals are nearby? Just a thought.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Here's one from the International Council on Clean Transportation. I just did a little segue from that last article. Published, looks like January 30th, 2019. Parts of Western Europe and North America could experience sonic booms every 5 minutes. Oh, no. Emerging commercial supersonic aircraft could create severe environmental and health impacts by 2035 if plans being put forward by aviation startups, their investors, and the Trump administration succeed. Oh, now we know who's to blame. It's the Trump administration. See, part of the fun of this, reading these articles go back to like 2017, 2018, actually 2014 for one of them. So this has been in the works for a while. We just haven't heard about it. Okay. Anyway, it says that is the conclusion of a new study released today by the International Council on Clean Transportation, the ICCT. This paper analyzes the landing and takeoff noise, sonic boom, and carbon dioxide, CO2, implications of introducing 2,000 new commercial supersonic transports, SST aircraft, serving 500 cities in 2035, a scenario envisioned by a prominent SST startup. Did they actually say 2,000 new commercial planes? 2,000. Do you know how many United has ordered?
Uh-uh.
20. They've ordered 20. Okay, not 2,000, 20. Japan Airlines has ordered 20. Okay, this isn't for everybody. These things, you know, it's going to be business class, so they're going to be expensive. But here's the thing that I think they really have to – so here, this is an exaggeration. Say, well, we're going to have so many airplanes, there's going to be booms all over the place. Well, that's not necessarily true, okay? I'm going to check out – I'll save this article for tomorrow because we only have about 2 minutes left. But I think it's like they don't want them, so they're searching for ways not to have them, and the companies seem to have answered the questions – of their objections. It's got good fuel. The sonic boom is lower because they're smaller, you know, and I'm sure if I looked at the map of the United States, I bet you I could draw a path from Los Angeles to New York, which would involve minimal overflights of populated centers, basically avoiding Kansas. You know, what other big cities do we have in the middle of the country? I think that's about it, right? If you fly north and south of Kansas, you got Michigan, you got the cities of Michigan and Wisconsin, you got Chicago. So you got Chicago in the north,
Chicago.
And you got space. You got Chicago in the Midwest, right? Then you got a lot of space. Then you got Kansas. Then you got a lot of space. Then you've got Texas, you know, Houston, Dallas, all those things. And that's it, okay? And what if the thing flew over the Gulf of Mexico? What if it flew over the Gulf of Mexico and then crossed over some? I mean, you got the Rockies. Well, I don't know how many people live in the Rockies. How many people would notice a sonic boom as it bounces off the mountains? Probably not many.
Yeah,
the Rockies should be
scheduled. They wouldn't notice it in Chicago. They hear booms all the time.
So here's a question for you tomorrow or sometime soon, Pianki. The relative noise of a local gunshot versus a sonic boom at 60,000 feet, which is louder?
Well, it depends on what your ears is tuned for.
I would say that a gunshot, even a block away, would be louder than a sonic boom at 60,000 feet from a needle-pointing aircraft that only holds 50 people.
Wow.
It's been interesting, huh? So I think we've answered most of the questions. Go ahead, Bianchi. You got 40 seconds.
Well, if you fly over Chicago, it stands a chance of getting shot down, too. So anyway you look at it.
Yeah, bullets don't go that high. Anyway, it's funny. But this is something we need to look into. And I think that if we advance, we need to advance our technology. We need to fly to Mars. And we need the Space Force. We need to keep these things moving.
Space
supersonic
Force,
airplanes.
Yeah.
I think there's no reason not to have supersonic airplanes. They're going to be business jets. Mm-hmm. They'll be supersonic. They're going to be commercial stuff. In fact, personal airplanes, or even personal airplanes, I know, I've looked into it. The old BD-10, we'll talk about that another day, where there actually were personal two-seat airplanes that are supersonic. Saker makes one also. All right, we're out of time. We'll talk airplanes another time. This has been a nice diversion from the usual stuff we talk about. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can support us at patreon.com/actionradio. You can listen to us in your vehicle by connecting your cell phone with the browser on our website to your audio system. And you can read the Santa Rosa Press Gazette and get a full report on us here at Action Radio. All right, I'll be back tomorrow at 7 o'clock Central Time.
God bless.